It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I got a speeding ticket in the mail yesterday.
In the mail?
Yeah. I think I'm going to just ignore it.
It's Mike Shope.
Where was this?
Spain.
And the Bulldog.
I think if I just lay low, I think I'll get away with it.
Not mention it on the air?
Definitely don't want to talk about it on the air.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I like the sound of this more and more as we go. I'm an outlaw.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Glad to have you with us on another... We've got some wildfire smoke, so it's not perfect outside, but it's been a pretty nice run of weather here in the old Western New York here. We are pleased to be joined right now on the Western Hotline by a good friend of Nate's and a friend of the station and the show. Spent a few years here on the Bills beat for ESPN's NFL Nation, now doing that same thing in Miami where he covers the Dolphins. He is, of course, Marcel Louis Jacques. Marcel, it's Nate and Chris in Buffalo. How are things?
Oh man, things are good. Things are hot right now. The humidity is. Let's just say this trip to Chicago is coming at the perfect time, man, because it's. My windows inside the house are fogging up. Like I can't see outside. It's beautiful. It's almost like nature's frosted glass, but it's pretty rough, man. I want to get out of here.
All right. Well, glad to hear you're going to have an opportunity to get out of there.
just remember this in like. February, all right?
Yeah. This is fair. I was about to say, as it was coming out, I'm like, dude, this is like the last audience.
Who are you talking to right now?
Like the absolute worst audience in the world to be complaining about weather to in August.
Yeah.
Oh, so, sorry, y'all.
Yeah, we forgive you. No problem. On behalf of the audience, I'm sure they're fine. The Dolphins are a very interesting team to me this year, Marcel. Like last year at this time, I still felt like they were the team that was closest in the Bills' rearview mirror, and I'm not sure I feel that way now. I could be overreacting to a lot of storylines about a lack of discipline and kind of a rudderless ship and all that kind of stuff. What's your read of the overall? Like what? It feels like from, again, 1,000 miles away here, like the Dolphins were trying to rid themselves of guys that might have been problems and try to empower the coaching staff and sort of take hold of things. But again, that's a read from far away here. What's the real story there?
Yeah, I mean, let's call it what it is. When one of your best players, who is also one of the best players in the league, doesn't respect the head coach, you're going to have a hard time. You know what I'm saying? Like you're going to have difficult. Mm-hmm. This is like, you know, I don't know, Matt Milano openly not listening to Sean McDermott. Like it's not a perfect comparison, but you get what I'm trying to say. It's going to breed instability mm-hmm. and tension, and that is what they're hoping for. The exact phrase that I heard from a team source was, and this is going to sound familiar to y'all, addition by subtraction.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they see this addition. Not necessarily Jonnu Smith. I think that was a legitimate gut punch for Miami. They just didn't want to pay him after 1 year like that. I'm sure that, you know, they didn't want to pay him what Pittsburgh ultimately ended up paying him. But it's neither here nor there. I think what we're hearing right now from Dolphins players is really a lot of transparency, a lot of admitting that last year was the kumbaya stuff was bull. You know, straight up Bradley Chubb told us they were lying to us last year, which odd because now it's like, okay, well, do we trust you now?
Right.
Like, are we supposed to believe this now? But from what we actually see and what we're able to see, it doesn't sound like nonsense this year. You know, little things, Jalen Phillips leading the edge rushers in between series, running sprints when they're not getting snaps. You know, I asked him about it today. He said he just likes to get an edge. He likes to make sure that they're always doing something, that they're always working. Tua throws an interception the other day to Minka Fitzpatrick. Tyreek Hill sprints 80-some-odd yards to track him down. You know, think like DK Metcalf and Buda Baker from a few years ago. It's a little thing that, you know, you might roll your eyes at from the outside, but inside, you're saying, oh, that's the kind of effort that this guy is giving in August. This is the same dude who needs to rebuild his image after effectively quitting on the team in January. Okay, maybe they're getting somewhere. Maybe they're onto something. But that's culture inside the building. Then you got to look at the actual talent. Offensively, it's this is more or less the same team. They beefed up a little bit on the offensive line. They're hoping that it makes a difference. Patrick Paul taking over for Teron Armstead, passing that test with flying colors in practice so far. Jonah Savaya-Naya is probably going to start there at left guard. That's why they picked him in the second round to throw him in the fire. Offensively, they should be fine. Front seven, they should be excellent. It's that secondary that we're still learning about.
Yeah. Well, I obviously want to get more into the roster, but I want to ask you while we're on the sort of, I started you on the culture portion of this conversation. How much has Mike McDaniel talked about needing to adjust and learning how to effectively lead a team? Because I, in a vacuum, I loved his style coming in, but I often wondered how will it really work with a team full of football players, a room full of football players. Certainly some guys would really dig his vibe, but I feel like there was a chance that some guys would think like, what's our head coach all about here? Has he talked about needing to adapt, or is that still kind of a closed subject?
Yeah, I mean, that's something he's a little vague about. It says, you know, like in anything, everything is a constant state of learning, right? A constant education. But he kind of told us, like, all right, I clearly have to adjust from just posting fines when people are late. Like, I can't just say, like, this guy's late. Here's your fine. Like, it can't come from him. And that's the overarching message here. It's about accountability. The players have to. It's their team. He said that multiple times. This is the players' team. Obviously, like, you want your coach to be able to coach, to steer the ship, to do that, da, da, da. But like, this isn't the Sims. He can't control every little action that they do. At the end of the day, they have to want it. They have to hold each other accountable. They have to listen. They have to be on time. So I think, like, he kind of, I don't want to say pleaded, because that sounds a little weak, but he stressed, let's say, to team leaders, you know, guys like Jalen Phillips, like Zach Sealer, Aaron Brewer, Jordan Brooks, you have to hold each other accountable. There can be no lapses. Like last year, there's nobody that is chewing Jalen Ramsey out. But this year, Tyreek and Jalen Waddle complain about sprints, and Jordan Brooks gets on him after practice about it. Like there's just, like I said, little changes here that it I know we want to say it's got to be the coach. But the coach wants it to be the players. He wants it to be the leaders, because it feels more organic that way than if you're just kind of like saying yes, sir, to the guy in charge. And, you know, it's you don't really want to do the dishes. He wants them to want to do the dishes.
Okay, I think it's a really good it's a pretty good analogy, Marcel.
Who wants to do the dishes?
Nobody does.
But you feel like it's the right thing to do,
right.
So you do that.
That's right.
Yeah, that's it.
I think I'm not going to say that maybe the conversation internally and within the Dolphins fan base is different than this, but I think from the outside looking in, especially from the national media, you don't hear a lot about Chris Greer's involvement in this, which this is a guy that picked this roster. I thought 2 years ago that towards the end of the season and into that offseason, the way that the players were talking about Vic Fangio when he ultimately left and went to Philadelphia and, by the way, won a Super Bowl, Something that to me was maybe the biggest red flag that I had ever seen from players like Jalen Ramsey, who is a veteran in the league, who's been outspoken over the course of his career. That's not new to me. But to sort of hear the criticisms, the open criticisms of, well, who the heck's Vic Fangio when he's one of the best defensive coordinators of the era? I always felt like that was the red flag to me, that I don't know that this is a roster that's built the right way. And you know, maybe they're more talented than other teams, but I just wonder, from your perspective, do you think that the criticism for Mike McDaniel should be equal or greater to than the criticism that Chris Greer's gotten? Because he's really the architect of these players that you're talking about now taking multiple seasons to figure out that, like, your head coach can't be the one that holds you accountable. And Marcel, like, that's a concept you learn in varsity in high school. Like, the coach leaves, and it's up to the leadership council. And that to me, that's not something you should be learning into year four of your head coach.
Oh, don't get me wrong. Like, there is a sense of like, hey, man, this is year four. Why are these very basic principles still being taught. But it is, I think, a byproduct of bringing in the wrong players, of bringing in players for the wrong reasons. I like Chris Greer. I respect Chris Greer. I will criticize Chris Greer in this aspect because the team was built like a Madden roster for a second there, for a couple years there. It's tough when you bring guys in and you make them the highest paid players on your team at the expense of homegrown talent leaving. So this is great. And Bradley Chubb has been a positive presence in the locker room. I'm just using his contract as an example. It's great that you have a Bradley Chubb, but then you lose an Andrew Van Ginkle. Like it's great when you bring in Jalen Ramsey, but then all of a sudden you're losing Javon Hollins and you're losing Christian Wilkins and you're losing Rob Hunt and you know.
Yep.
So like it is a tough way to build. It's a tough way to build. You've got mercenaries sometimes. Like you run the risk of adding mercenaries to your team instead of guys where, okay, this means something to me. Like this is the team that drafted me. This is my spot. This is my organization. So I think they ran into that issue a little bit there. I think they have largely cleaned that out. I think that they believe this group is bought in. I think Tua Tagovailoa has taken a bigger step, a more vocal step as a leader. That's something that I don't think is particularly natural to him. I think it's something that it has taken him a few years because of the Brian Flores era to get used to doing and to be comfortable doing and to accept the fact that, like, I am a leader. Like, guys do look up to me. Like, I am one of the best players on this team, if not the best player on this team. Like, I need to be – I'm the guy people are looking to. I have to come through. I have to deliver. So, like, it's – don't get me wrong here. You're right in the sense that, like, dude, this is year four, man. Like, you can't be asking players to be accountable. But at the same time, like I said, this isn't The Sims. You can't control every little thing they do. At some point, the responsibility does fall on players to behave. In a sense, like it falls on players to do the work, and from everything we're being told this year, they're doing the work. I want to see it. I believe it when, you know, they're going to Buffalo and win a game, or I believe it when they win the division. I'll believe it when they don't fall apart in December. But they are speaking it, and everything looks—it's passing the eye test right now in August.
So, is that, would you say, maybe all of the reasoning of trading a Jalen Ramsey? I mean, it's a player they extended. It's a player that I think they looked at the position and they traded. I know, and Kohu obviously gets hurt. Different. I mean, he's the slot guy, but like they really thinned out a position that was really thin behind Jalen Ramsey. And now, obviously, with injuries, it's even more thin. Like, is the Jalen Ramsey trade maybe like the line in the sand then for the organization?
Yeah, and I think that's kind of that's a message from McDaniel. It's a message from Greer, too. It's like, dude, if you're not with it, you're getting out of here. Like, if you're not on board, we will get you off. We will get you off board. You will leave the ship. So, and while we're talking, just going back to Chris Greer and this Jalen Ramsey trade, I think that's the best move that he has made since he has taken over as general manager, is flipping Jalen Ramsey for Minka Fitzpatrick. Whatever you think about Minka's peak of his career, maybe he's at it, maybe he's, you know, it's on his decline, whatever, but to get a player of that caliber for a guy who you knew, the world knew you wanted to trade. We did an exercise at ESPN, you know, some of our insiders, what do you expect in return, and I had to choose the offers. I was getting seventh round picks, I was getting pick swaps. I saw a fourth round pick from Ben Solak and said, oh my god, that's the best it's going to get. Absolutely, I'll take it. So to get Minka Fitzpatrick back, I thought was pretty impressive, not even just from an on-field standpoint and from a need standpoint, but culturally, this is a guy who is going to go to work. He's going to put his head down, and he's about business. It's not going to be a distraction off the field. He's not filming this, that, and the third. He's not hopping on streams and on Twitch. I think that's the kind of player that they're hoping for, that kind of cut of player down here. But, yeah, man, look, Jalen Ramsey, I've said it before, they see it as addition by subtraction. I have no doubt he will probably be successful in an organization like Pittsburgh. No-nonsense head coach like Mike Tomlin, a guy who he really respects and can see eye to eye with. I think Jalen Ramsey is the kind of guy who he is not – you're not going to get his all unless he feels challenged. Like, and not challenge like I'm in your face, like challenge like he has to try, like he has to use his brain. We could see it in press conferences. We see it on the field. Like, that's just kind of how he's built. He's like the really smart kid in your class who doesn't try unless he's intrigued. Doesn't try because he thinks the material is too easy.
Right. Marcel Louis-Jacques on the Dolphins beat with ESPN on the Western Hotline with us for a few more minutes here. You mentioned Hill and Waddle. Hill has been on a bit of a sort of, you know, like mending fences type of deal, and maybe chiefly with his quarterback. How would you assess the relationship right now between Tyreek Hill and Tua Tagovailoa?
I think Tua's comments the other day were deliberate, right? Like that's what I'm talking about when he's coming into his own as a leader, as a person who, you know, is going to hold players accountable publicly, privately, whatever it takes, no matter who it is. I think it was a display to show that nobody is safe from this. Nobody's exempt from this new culture of accountability. But like, don't let that confuse you with they were pissed in the moment. They were pissed when it happened. Guys weren't happy. Like, this is the only time, guys, that I have seen a player quit on the team and remain on the team.
Yeah.
I forget who it was who tried to pull this in San Francisco, and they crushed him as soon as there was a microphone held up to them.
Campbell, like, right? The linebacker?
Devondre Campbell.
Yeah, Devondre Campbell, yep.
The Niners were so pissed. They held on to him so that he couldn't go play anywhere else. Like that's the kind of response you usually get when you pull yourself out of a game, and especially when you go to the media talking about maybe I could play here, maybe I should be somewhere else. I don't know. Like, we'll see. I'm out. He did have to rebuild. Like, I know Tyreek, there's some things he does where you're like, oh, that's Tyreek being Tyreek, and the play typically helps mask some of that behavior. But when you're not necessarily performing on the field, and then you pull that. Yeah, he had some work to do. And again, this is one of those, by all accounts, he is doing the work. You know, there's been a couple times out of 11 practices where he's late to stretch. I don't know the reasons why. I don't know what he's doing. This is a behavior that was very, very typical throughout the past three seasons, to the point where we have to ask PR, hey, is Tyreek healthy or is he missing practice? Because sometimes he's just not out there during media sessions. But for the most part, he's on time. He's certainly engaged. You know, that wrist injury has healed. He's catching the ball a lot better. I think he's doing the work. And again, we're going to have to see it. It doesn't really matter that much in August. I want to see it in November, in December. And, you know, they've got a tough stretch there toward the end of the season that's probably going to make or break. You know, they get Pittsburgh, they got Cincinnati, they've got Washington. There are games that are going to make or break their season late in the year. I want to see what he does when adversity hits, not just when it's hot outside, but when there's real adversity pertaining to your success as a team. But he definitely had some work to do, and, you know, by all accounts, he is doing the work.
I know last year was kind of a mess, but is he still... Where's his play still capable of masking whatever, you know, oddities there might be in his preparation or anything else that you've alluded to here? Is he still Tyreek Hill that we remember torching the Bills?
Yeah. I think he was just voted 47 in this NFL top 100. I think that's too low. I think it's too low. I think he might not be the number one player in the league like he was entering last season, but like I think that there were enough extra, you know, external factors, extenuating factors, to write last year off as an anomaly. He did tear a ligament in his wrist in August and played through it instead of getting season-ending surgery. That would explain some of the drops, some of the lapses of focus, some of the absences from practice. He did have to play with Tyler Thompson and Tyler Huntley, and there's a third quarterback whose name I can't remember, but that kind of makes my point for me. They did have to play with the motley crew at quarterback for a lot of the season. Tua was not healthy. That chemistry never really set. So, like, there was enough going on that I think it's the reason why Dolphins in the building have not written him off. They do believe that he's going to bounce back. I think they're going to get the ball in his hands in a number of ways. It's not just going to be Tyreek go deep. I don't know if I'm at liberty to say what we've seen in practice, but I think they're going to be creative in how they get him the ball in space. I think you're going to see a bounce back from – you're going to see a typical Tyreek Hill year this season. He's even like – and when we talk about doing the work, you could even see it. So this is my fourth year covering Tyreek. He is noticeably slimmer this year. Not just slimmer like, oh, he's skinny, like healthy slim. Like, oh, you've been taking care of yourself this offseason. Slim. You're not just eating Chipotle every day like he's admitted in the past, you know, in the offseason, and then using your athleticism to get by. You're studying, you're taking notes, which is a bad thing to admit to doing for the first time in your fourth year in an offense, but yeah, late is better than never.
Let me ask you one more thing here, Marcel, before we let you go. Obviously, the injuries to the defensive back, their cornerback room, really has been depleted. And I've got, you know, my buddy for Brett, as you know, Brett, he's a big Dolphins fan. He keeps telling me about this is Cam Smith's year. Where are you with this defensive back room? And are they, is it an NFL room right now? Or can it be an NFL room if all else goes correct, especially up front on the front seven?
Can I tell Brett something on radio, live on radio?
I think you could.
It's not Cam Smith's year, man. It's not Cam Smith's year. He's missed the last three practices. He's already hurt. We asked Mike about him the other day. The first thing out of Mike's mouth is, yeah, we're waiting the day where he can stay on the field. Like, this is the guy who can find something nice to say in any situation, and he can't find something nice to say because the guy's not available. This was the easiest path to play time he has had since maybe high school, man. And he wasn't starting. I can't say which group is which, but he was not starting before he got hurt. I think he's a legitimate cut candidate.
Wow.
this summer, which is, it's tough. I don't like saying that. I don't have joy in saying this guy is not living up to expectations, but like Chris Greer challenged him in April. He said, like, we can't hold his hand anymore. He has to go. Like, we need him this year. And I don't know that that's what they've gotten from him straight out the gate in training camp. So, yeah, I think that's going to end up a miss for Chris Greer. But the good thing is he's missed on high-round quarterback or corners, but he keeps hitting on the UDFAs. So, Kader Kohu, UDFA, was a big hit. Torn ACL is a huge blow.
Yeah.
Another guy, Storm Duck. It's not going to be hard to remember that name. Storm Duck, I think, has a bright future here in Miami. I think he's caught the attention of Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle. They've kind of taken him under their wing from the opposite side of the line of scrimmage. I think they see a lot of promise in him. The team does as well. Like, it is the first week of August, right? Like, we've known what this cornerback's room looks like or is going to look like for months now, and there hasn't been any dramatic change to it, right? So what does that tell you? That tells you that the front office, that the coaching staff sees a little more than the public does with this room. I've had this thought watching them at practice, like, you know what? Maybe the room isn't bad. Maybe it just doesn't have the name brand recognition we're used to seeing out of the room. It doesn't have the Xavien Howard, the Byron Jones, the Jalen Ramsey, the Kendall Fuller in it. But it has some talent. And then not to mention the free agent, the veterans that they did add, you know, Mike Hilton said himself, he was surprised he was still on the market. This was a double-digit game starter last year. I think he's a solid starting option at nickelback. Jack Jones, if he can keep it together off the field, Jack Jones is a ball hawk. Jack Jones adds that dog element that I think they need in the secondary. These aren't bad corners. So I think it's one of those where they're going to be a little bit better than a lot of us gave them credit for all offseason. But, you know, don't get me wrong, they are still fairly unproven.
Marcel, we're already ridiculously late, but really quick. Realistic expectation. Chasing down the Bills for the division, wild card, like what's real?
Wild card. This is the Bills division to win. And I'm going to keep it succinct because I know I went long here. This is the Bills' division to win. I refuse to believe anything other than that until I see it. I'm done. I tried it a couple years ago. I was wrong. Like, I don't care if this gets clipped and show. Like, we're at a point where Dolphins fans can't even argue with me, man. Like, the Bills are the Bills.
Yeah,
Bills are the Bills.
The time shot was not a shot at you going long. I miss cues every segment. So it was not at all directed at you that we were running late.
No, my mouth is dry, so I know I've been talking.
My old fault. No, we love it. It was great. It was a great visit. It was nice to catch up with you, and hopefully we can do this again once the season gets rolling.
Absolutely, man. You know how to find me.
All right.
Thanks for having me on.
That is Marcel Louis-Jacques, ESPN NFL Nation Dolphins reporter.
By the way, 8 is the magic number. 8 picks before Osiris Torrance, the Dolphins took Cam Smith, who he's talking about them potentially cutting.
Yeah.
And Osiris Torrance is one of the better young offensive guards. It's not like they need guard help either. So.
No big deal. Yeah. All right. Thanks again to Marcel. We got to take a break because I already said we're late. Nate is in for Mike. I'm the Bulldog. We'll talk more about the Bills and James Cook and contract extensions and maybe the Dolphins a little bit because we know Nate loves to do that too. I'm the Bulldog and this is WGR.
Again, I'm not necessarily advocating for the Bills meeting his demands, but I also can acknowledge that this offense is optimized to have James Cook as part of it, and they wouldn't be as good. I mean, the Bills' offense is efficient. It's not explosive. And James Cook is the most explosive thing that this offense has. Now, we certainly hope that could be a little bit different this year with some of the new pieces. But the guy that gave the explosive plays of this offense was James Cook, and that'd be a big piece missing.
That is the mighty Joe Marino, a regular guest here on WGR. I think Wednesdays are his time slot. Locked On Bills and lots of other stuff. He's doing a podcast with Jerry Ostrowski and Jeremy White from our morning show as well. That's, a weekly thing as well. Anyway, talking about James Cook and no lies detected. You said earlier, like he's, and a lot of fans have been saying this all summer and even going back into the spring. He's the next most, explosive. He's the next most dangerous person in this offense after Josh Allen. You know, I wouldn't want to get to value because the tackles and whatever, but like you want big plays on offense. James Cook is your next best bet after Allen. And, that's because the receiving corps just doesn't really feature a guy that has that, at least not yet. I mean, we'll see if someone takes a step in that department this year, but Cook has been it. So
we're going to really test the depths of everybody eats. Is it just receivers or is it also running backs?
Tight ends.
Right. I can.
They're included in the receivers. Yeah. Before we get away from the conversation we just had with Marcel Louis-Jacques, and thanks again to him for his time on the Dolphins. Where are you? I know you have it's almost a cottage industry. It's a part of your brand.
Let me get my pulse really quick.
It is getting after Miami fans on the social media sites. Where are you at on that? Because I'm expecting Mike McDaniel to get fired. I don't know if he'll get fired in season, but I just think that the implosion is incoming. I think anytime you hear this stuff about, we're cleaning out the bad apples, right? There's going to be dudes still on that team.
That happens when you have a new regime.
Right.
Not in the going into year 4, right, which is what we talk about.
I think it's very likely there's still guys there that are like, why did we trade Jalen Ramsey? Yeah. He's good. Yeah. And this coach with the sweatpants, what are we doing? Yeah. So I don't think it's going to work. I appreciate the effort, but it feels like desperation at this point to me.
I am surprised by a few things with the Dolphins. A, that Mike McDaniel and Chris Greer are both back. B, that I thought the trade of Jonnu Smith made less sense than the trade of Jalen Ramsey.
Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah. Right? I thought for the first time they had an offense that featured a player inside the hashes, which is where their quarterback is best at throwing the football. I have a Dolphins buddy, Elf, who we get into it all the time. And whatever the Dolphins do, the Dolphins are always right, even though they don't really – they have the longest playoff win drought outside of – I mean, there's a drought happening in New York. They haven't been to the playoffs. Dolphins haven't won a playoff game since before 9/11. So, not everything they do is right, just saying. But the whole idea of they didn't want to pay Jonnu Smith, so they traded him, and he was kind of a part of that Micah Fitzpatrick deal. I think I actually agree with the framing of the Fitzpatrick and Ramsey swap. I agree that they got way more for Ramsey than I thought that they would. Mm-hmm. I think that Micah Fitzpatrick's in the same place, younger, but in the same place in his career that Jalen Ramsey is, which is on the wrong side of it. And it really showed last year. The last 2 years, he has 2 interceptions. This is not a player that is one of the best safeties in the league anymore. In fairness, Javon Holland, they thought was that, and then he kind of tapered off and then got paid elsewhere. But, like, to me, you finally had, I thought, a sustainable short passing game with Jonnu Smith, and then they traded him, and then they were like, oh, well, we'll just get
Darren Waller.
Darren Waller, who hasn't practiced yet, because who would have known the guy had that retired because he didn't want to block anyone, which is literally what he said. I was playing fullback. I had to block people. Yeah, I'm retiring. I'm done with this stuff. It's so many puzzling decisions after puzzling decisions. And did they end up signing Noah Fant? Did that happen? No, I think he signed with Cincinnati.
Yeah.
So they didn't even get him. That would have at least been like, okay, I could see. I think that the conversation and some of the stuff that I've heard about them in some of the remarks that McDaniel's made about wanting to be a more physical football team. Okay, well, that just means to me, you don't know who you are. This is, you've built the roster. You want to be more physical. You don't have the dogs for that. I mean, you don't. You don't have a physical. They were a finesse football team. And that is who they've built towards. That's, to me, why the head coach is still there in the first place. Because his system's the fits a finesse system.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have the dogs for that. So I think their secondary is a disaster. I think it's the worst in football. Jack Jones, there's a reason why he was available. Mike Hilton, they have a defensive backfield that it would have been great in 2020. But it's not, like, they're in trouble overall mm-hmm. in their defensive backfield. And, yeah, their front seven's good if Jalen Phillips doesn't miss 14 games like he has the last 2 years, and Bradley Chubb, who didn't play any games last year, plays to the same that they gave him that crazy extension to. So, like, all of this to say,
I kind of like Chop Robinson. I just want to say.
I like Chop Robinson a lot, actually.
Not that I shouldn't have interrupted you.
They get a second rolling. Round pick at guard that they're going to plug in, and maybe he's really good. Maybe he's Osiris Torrance, and maybe he'll be great. But you lost your best offensive lineman. You have to hope the guy you drafted in the second round last year can be good. And I don't know. I think that over under 5.5 weeks, I could absolutely see Mike McDaniel getting fired by week 6 or 7 and the thing just becoming toxic. And then, to me, part of the reason, I think there's two reasons McDaniel's still here in Miami. First and foremost, it's because I don't know that any other coach is going to walk into the situation and saying Tua is my franchise quarterback. What coach, like, that offense can literally only be ran by Tua. They try, like,
right.
They kept the guy in the system for 3 years. He walked in. He was like, I don't know what to do here. this doesn't, like, they have an offense that one guy has the keys that fit and can play it. Who are they bringing in? Like, that's my question. So I think the main reason he's still there is because they paid a boatload of money to the quarterback that can only run his system. And then secondarily, I think that they were probably from the ownership level looking at this and saying, we can't fire another coach. Like, we're already paying the last one.
Mm-hmm.
That was a disaster. But there is seemingly a lot of – they also have, like, one of the longest tenure general managers
right.
who hasn't built a good football team. So, you know, listen, their fans are going to believe that they're going to have a shot for this division. I think it's more likely that the Jets have a better record at the end of the season than the Dolphins. I think they've got a better coach. Wow. I think their quarterback is going to give him a chance, even though he's struggled passing the football, it looks like, in the last couple of practices. I just think it is a fuse. It's a California wildfire and someone just lit a garbage fire. Like that, it is so ready to blow.
Yeah.
And man, the popcorn I'm going to be eating when it does.
Anytime you need some energy, just get Nate Geary to talk about the Dolphins for you.
That's easy.
I just learned today because you, I mean, that was.
We're up 8 more beats per second.
You went in.
Yeah.
All right, we'll hit a timeout here and get back to the Bills. Sal Capaccio, by the way, coming up at the top of the hour with us to talk more about this Kyren Williams contract, comparable to James Cook, and kick that around. And also, of course, talk about Hard Knocks debuting tonight at 9 p.m. on HBO Max. So Sal Capaccio coming up. Still time for you to call in between now and then if you want. 803-0550 is the number. He's Nate Geary sitting in for Mike Schoep along with Zach Jones. I'm the Bulldog, and this is WGR.